Debbie.
Hi, Hallie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
I'm very excited to be talking to you. You have been on my bucket list for years.
Oh, that's very sweet. Thank you.
I am such an admirer of your work as an actor. And now, as writer and producer as well, of The Last Champion, this film is fantastic, Hallie.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm glad you liked it.
Oh, what you and Glenn have done, and his direction, is fabulous.
I'm so proud of him. It's the three of us, too. It's our daughter as well. We all three wrote it together. So I want to leave her out, Ivy. And she's definitely a part of the team. But yeah, he did an amazing job directing. I'm super proud of what he did.
Everything that the three of you did with Glenn's direction, all of your producing, and the team that you brought in, Rich Schaefer as your cinematographer, has captured some of the most beautiful imagery. And the way that Glenn has structured the film visually with the opening shot, that really, you're going to grab every Yellowstone fan that Cole Hauser has with that opening shot and him there with the sun setting and his chaps sitting against the rock. You got a built-in audience with that one.
Well, I don't think that the Yellowstone fans will be disappointed. I know he's not playing Rip this time, but he's playing a different, very also interesting character. So... and he gets to do things that he doesn't get to do on Yellowstone.
Yeah.
So I'm in awe of his talent, of his skills. He's amazing.
This all comes down to the story and the script and the characters that you and Ivy and Glenn have written. And then, of course, you step in as Melinda Miller with a performance we don't normally get to see from Hallie Todd.
No, I guess that's true. I mean, we knew when we were writing it and we came up with that character that, you know, I was like, mine, I'm playing her. You don't need to look at anybody else. I'm putting my dibs on it. But so that was, you know, that's kind of one of the reasons that we wanted to go independent many years ago, is so we could do things that we might not be allowed to do, you know, in the industry, with people wanting you to, you know, do the same thing all the time, or not being able to visualize you sort of stepping out of whatever is familiar to people. Now it's Lizzie McGuire, but it used to be other things that, you know, because I've been in this game for quite a while. But yeah, so it's fun to have, you know, the opportunity. It's hard work, but to create that opportunity, but it's, you know, I don't know who would give me that part. I wasn't going to give it to myself.
I can honestly tell you, Hallie, that I didn't even recognize you as Melinda.
No, thank you.
That you...
I hope not.
You are so transformative in this performance. Not just with the type of character, but in what you bring with the physicality, with your movement, and then throw in the makeup and the hair and the costume. Absolutely amazing transformation, but that attitude,
it's
so rich. And
that's very kind.
I really love how you play that, and especially how you play that against Sean Scully's Michael. The two of you are just outstanding in scenes together.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really proud. He did a great job too, and in a lot of ways. But one thing that Sean, you know, he had never wrestled before, so he had to learn it and then train for that in a pretty intense way, because Casey Moss, who played Scott, had a wrestling background, and so did the character who plays Jack, Michael John Madden. But Sean had never done it. I mean, I think maybe he did it for like a semester in junior high or something, but that was it. So he came with a big task, and I think he really accomplished it.
Watching him, I never would have believed he had never wrestled.
I know. It's amazing.
Wow.
He was very dedicated.
Wow. You know, what was the inspiration for this story? Because for my money, this is the perfect film at a perfect time in the world today. We're talking, you're dealing with redemption, with forgiveness, with friendship, with forgiving oneself, with finding oneself. These very core values that people desperately need right now and need to be reminded of. So it's very fortuitous the film is coming out now, but I'm curious, what was the impetus for this story?
Well, we had done a horror movie, a family unit, and we wrote it, and I was also in that one, and Glenn directed that one as well, and we all produced it together, and it was sort of, it was an adventure, and it was fun to do, and it was for, as much as it was a chase film and people get hurt and, you know, had a lot of kind of expected horror movies, I mean, Cabin in the Woods kind of, except it was a, it was a houseboat on a lake. familiar, I don't want to say tropes, but we did it in kind of an innovative way, and we kept it clean and scary at the same time. So I was proud because I had, at one point, was very involved in teaching acting, and I had students that, we wrote it for, and we cast them, and they were all new newbies and neighbors had never done anything. And I think it lent itself to a real reality about seeing real girls, you know, in these real situations. And so it was almost kind of European, Glenn's take on it, but it was very dark. Mm-hmm. And we definitely didn't want to do something in that genre coming out of that. So we knew we wanted to do something inspirational and uplifting. And so we just started kind of throwing ideas out. And Glenn had been a champion wrestler as a high schooler. That was his sport. He was really passionate about it. He really excelled at it. And in his mind, he'd never seen a wrestling movie that really captured what he felt the experience was for him.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there are some good ones out there, he wanted to do something he felt like it hadn't been done yet. So that was in the back of his mind for years and years. And then when we started putting the story together, we decided, well, why don't we put it against that backdrop and make it about a man's path to redemption after a fall from grace? And we decided what that fall from grace would be. And we had visited Garfield because we had friends who lived there. And we decided we should set it in a small town and we would shoot it there. And we did all the pre-visualization. And we just kind of started brainstorming and putting the story together and creating the characters and everything kind of, it was a long time doing it. Ivy was in college when we wrote it, so we were having to do it in piecemeal as she was available, but mm-hmm. we did it. And so it came out of the need to not do a horror film.
Well, and what I love here is while we have a redemptive path of one character, we also see the non-redemptive, I don't care, I am right, everyone is wrong, that Randall Batenkoff's character takes.
Yeah.
And I just love that contrast. And he and Cole have been friends for, I think, close to 30 years. I think Cole's very first film, the two of them were in together. So to see the two of them at odds on screen, almost like the angel and the devil at moments.
Yeah.
You couldn't have done any better with casting and with this character construct.
Thank you. I think Randall brought so much humanity to that character, too, because, you know, anyone who's ever been like a little bit of a helicopter parent or a little bit of a, you know, just want my kid to succeed, anything for my kid kind of, you know, drive, I think can relate, you know, maybe not to the depth that he sinks to make it happen, but definitely to that need to not, you know, to not see his kid fail. And also to have, you know, these residual feelings of jealousy and resentment towards Cole's character, you know, that was like the perfect storm.
Yeah.
for being a, I won't say the word, but not a nice person.
It's funny because as soon as I saw the film, the first thing I did was email Randall And I told him, it's like, oh my God, you give new definition to a sports obsessed parent.
But like the Vic Morrow from Bad News Bears, to me, that's what I think of, you know, that.
Yes.
You know, yeah. Nobody else matters.
How difficult was it crafting each of the supporting characters here? Because they're not just superficial. You really flesh out the people in this small town so that we get to know them, which adds another level of gravitas to John Wright's journey. So I'm curious about that, because so often, as you well know, the background characters are often left to their own devices and they just flutter off into the wind and get cut off the sidebars of the screen.
Right. Well, you know what? I think maybe because Glenn and I are actors. I mean, he was an actor for so many years. And so we think about things from an actor's point of view, too. So we think of, you know, as an actor, you're putting yourself in someone's shoes and you're thinking about the relationship from that person's point of view. So instead of just having it serve the story, we're thinking about, you know, that person's needs and what they're trying to get out of that moment, you know, or that situation. And so I think maybe that part felt easier to me, just writing the other characters, because you know, if someone was feeling underdeveloped, I was looking at it like, how would I play this part if I had this part, you know, what is missing from this? And you can't be everybody's story, because otherwise there's a lot. You can't make it, you know, 18 hours long, but you know what I'm saying? But there's that reality of, you know, it's not just John Wright going through a scene and meet, you know, this person, that person. They all have an agenda. Mm-hmm. And as an actor, I think I've never really thought about it until you just asked, but that is, I think, probably been really helpful coming at it from an actor's point of view.
Yeah, because I love the depth that we get from the small town that really makes it so much more poignant by the time we get to the third act.
Thank you.
When you see the pastor and you see, you know, the coach's widow sit standing up in church and making the first gesture. Really so beautiful. And you really capture that small town feel.
Thank you so much. I mean, I've spent time in small towns. Glenn was not from a town. That town, Garfield, where we shot it and where it takes place, is like it got a population of under 650 people.
Wow.
So Glenn grew up in Kentucky in not like a really super rural area, but in, you know, a smaller community. Ivy and I are both born and raised in Los Angeles, so we didn't have that experience growing up. But my mom sure did, and so, you know, I would hear her stories and, you know, her folklore about growing up, because she definitely she moved around. Her dad was a doctor with the VA, so they moved all the time from base to base all over the country, and she had so many stories. So that I think informed me a bit about just people in those parts of the country and what they value and how they relate to each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are people everywhere, but I mean, sometimes you're concerned if you're in a more urban area.
Yes.
And I think it had to take place in a place that small, because otherwise he would have places he could hide.
Yes.
You know, but when he comes back home, he has to be just revealed to everybody. They have to just, he can't hide.
Yeah.
He has to be like facing everybody.
Something that you and Glenn and Ivy do is you chose to shoot this in winter. Now, granted, wrestling, anybody that can recall back to their days in high school, wrestling traditionally is like during the winter. It's yeah, the indoor sport during the winter if you don't want to go outside to the football games.
Right.
But you could have picked a small town anywhere else where you're not tromping through 2 and 3 feet of snow. So I'm curious, as a producer who's on set every day and as a writer, you know, how did the logistics, how did the snow and the cold impact you from a production standpoint and also a performance standpoint?
First of all, we had thought about shooting it the year prior,
mm-hmm,
but we weren't really ready. And it turned out because they didn't get a snow that year. So we were like, okay, well, we're not ready anyway. We'll wait till the following winter. So the following winter, they had a 17-year record snowfall where it was like so much snow. It was ridiculous. And we had, you know, there's not a lot of reception out in Garfield, so it was like, oh, it was just crazy, crazy. Sometimes it was several degrees below zero, and they at one point were having big blow dryers to thaw the camera lenses because they froze. And it was, when I didn't have to be there, I didn't in the real cold. There was like the one scene that takes place in the corral is the only scene I actually had at night. It was everybody on the set in their winter garb, you know, in their Sorel boots and their, you know, their heavy duty cold weather gear. But I had my costume on, which was just me and a pair of jeans and a little jacket. And
yeah, not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot, and a pair of boots that were like just skinny boots. You know what I mean? Like nothing you would. And it was so cold that, and we were out there for so many hours, I thought my feet were going to have to just chip off. They were so cold. And when I got in the van afterwards, I couldn't stop like vocalizing the shivers. Like they weren't just like, ooh, you know, it was like my whole body was like vocalizing shivers. I've never had that happen to me ever where I couldn't not make the noise. Like the driver was looking at me like, are you okay?
Oh my God.
I was like, oh. It was so cold for like 20 minutes coming down, like trying to get warm in a car. I've never been that cold in my life. But it looked good. I think I was slurring my words because it was so cold. My mouth was frozen.
Well, it all looks really good on camera, though.
It looks so pretty on camera. I just love the way it looks. I mean, and Glenn, you know, he pre-visualized every shot in that film. He went up early with a small crew and just did, with some local people just standing in for the characters. He shot every shot. And pre-planned it. So when we got to the set, he was completely prepared because it was cold. And if he hadn't been prepared, it would have been a nightmare. Mm. You couldn't do that to people.
Yeah.
Well, to get them in and get them out.
I have to ask you, Hallie, with all of your experience in front of the camera, now you've moved behind the camera, you've done television, you've done film, but this is a very special project. What did you personally take away from making The Last Champion that you may take with you into future projects or that may inform your approach to future projects, even be it in front of or behind the camera?
Oh, man. Because our first film was so raw and so super indie, this one was different because we were dealing with more challenges. You know, it was just a bigger movie and more challenges. And I think through both projects, though, I have just a much, much deeper respect for what goes on besides what an actor's job is, because I was only an actress for so long and very myopic in that and, you know, not really comprehending and therefore not appreciating how much work goes into it. And then on the other side of that, I don't know if this is really an answer to that question, but I'm really grateful to do something that's uplifting. And that could, because it is an incredibly challenging time right now for people. And who knew when we made this movie, that it would be being delivered at this particular moment, which is, I think people need something to lift them up. And so I really hope, because I think, you know, this is about finding your way out of hopelessness and despair. And there's a lot of that right now, and a lot of disconnection, and a lot of just people being so at odds with each other. And this movie's about community, and it's about faith, and it's about coming out of a hole, basically. And so I'm really hoping that the message reaches people. I don't know what the next project is going to be, but it makes me really want to do more of this kind of a thing, you know? Well, I mean, because if you're not touching an audience, what's the point? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. Well, I have just always so thoroughly enjoyed you. As a matter of fact, there was a Murder, She Wrote episode on just last week that I watched with you in it.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I've never seen a single Murder, She Wrote that I was in.
Oh, my God. And you were in...
I think it's the only thing I've never seen. Mm-hmm. I just never saw them. Didn't watch them.
Oh, my God.
You know, and here's a bit of trivia for you, is that I was... my career didn't go this direction, but I was obsessed with musical theater as a young girl. And that was, you know, my fantasy. And so Angela Lansbury was the sun, the moon, and the stars to me, right? I did 7 episodes of that show, and I never met her. Not one time. Yeah. So isn't that funny?
Oh, my God.
Because I played with her substitute detective. So, yeah. So I never met her. She's still, like, you know, it's still the thing to meet Angela Lansbury one day.
That's your bucket list. Angela Lansbury.
That's my bucket list.
Angela Lansbury's on Hallie Todd's bucket list. Oh, my God.
She totally is.
Oh, my God. Oh, Hallie, this has been such a delight to get to talk to you.
Oh, me too.
All this time, and after Last Champion, I guess we'll look forward to you in Lizzie McGuire at some point.
At some point, I'm anticipating that. We started it last year, and we had to pause it for a little while, and hopefully we're going to be regrouping hopefully soon and get back to it, because I know people are waiting for that, and we had a blast getting back together again, and I think it was something that was going to turn out really well and make a lot of people happy.
You've made me very happy with The Last Champion, and I can't wait to see what you and Glenn and Ivy bring us next.
Thank you so much. Thank you for taking so much time with me today. I appreciate it.
Oh, Hallie, thank you so much, and have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you. You too.